This podcast is a production of KCRW.com.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
Cats, dogs, and California politics. Hello again, I'm Oren Olney, and this is Which Way LA, KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. A Sacramento reporter says Californians are fighting like cats and dogs over cats and dogs. A bill forcing owners to spay or neuter their pets has generated thousands of letters, emails, and angry debates in legislative committee rooms. Supporters say stop killing hundreds of thousands of unwanted animals every year at taxpayers' expense. Purebred breeders don't like it, even though they'd be exempt. Would mutts be outlawed? We'll hear a debate tonight. On Reporter's Notebook, LA Times columnist Steve Lopez tells Mayor Villaraigosa, grow up. First, here's the news. Warren Olney back with Which Way LA on KCRW. Anybody in news or politics may suspect that Californians are more passionate about animals than they are about their own children. Case in point, the most hotly contested bill in Sacramento this year would require spaying or neutering all dogs and cats at 4 months of age, with some exceptions. Assemblyman Anthony Adams is a Republican from Hesperia. Assemblyman, good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be with you.
Before we get to the merits of the bill or your vote on it, you have been quoted as saying, it's amazing how motivated people are, both for and against. I've never been lobbied this hard on anything. Tell us what you mean.
Well, this bill is a fascinating one in that I sit on a number of committees that have very controversial bills. This year alone, we've had a bill concerning universal health care. We've had bills concerning euthanasia, the right to die. We've had bills concerning people's children, people's cars, people's pocketbooks. And yet for all of the myriad things that you would think would be of tantamount importance, nothing has raised the ire of my constituents more than this bill. We have received literally thousands of correspondence concerning it.
More for or against?
Oh, absolutely, unequivocally against the passage of 1634. There have been very loud, vocal, and a large group of people favoring the adoption of the bill, but by and large, without question, opposed to it.
Other assemblymen in different constituencies from yours out there in Hesperia say it's the other way around. They've gotten an enormous amount of correspondence in favor of the bill.
It doesn't surprise me. That's part of what makes this such an interesting bill, is that it has just raised the public dialogue concerning government's place in all aspects of our life to a heightened level. And it's a shame that we can't seem to arouse this sort of motivation on so many other important pressing issues.
Anthony Adams, Republican Assemblyman from Hesperia. Judy Mancuso is campaign director for the California Healthy Pets Coalition. That's a co-sponsor of the spay and neuter bill. Ms. Mancuso, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you.
Why do you think people are so fired up, yourself included, in favor of this bill?
Well, I think that there's been, for the uninformed, there's been a lot of misinformation and a lot of fear tactics going on. But I would like to say that we did receive 7,000 support letters into the assembly, which doubled the amount of opposition letters. And the 7,000 letters that came in support were all from the state of California and not duplicates, and the opposition was sending from out of state.
Okay, why do we need this?
We need it because we're spending $250 million a year in California to bring in over, in 2005, we brought in over 840,000 dogs and cats into our city and county shelters, and we killed over 450,000.
What good would it do to neuter all of the dogs and cats? Wouldn't that eliminate dogs and cats?
Absolutely not. This is not a ban on breeding. This is not a ban on animals in any way. There are several breeding amendments, or exemptions, I should say, in the bill that allow for breeding. So if you are a responsible breeder today, you're going to continue to be a responsible breeder tomorrow.
So are your concerns primarily humanitarian for the 450,000 animals that are killed, or fiscal for the $250 million it costs to do it?
Yes, both. I've been in animal rescue for over 15 years. I'm doing this as a volunteer. I am not paid. I spend my own money on this campaign. And so my whole motivation behind this was seeing the amount of unwanted animals and how our shelters are saturated. You know, all of our rescue homes and facilities are saturated, and how many animals are forced to be euthanized, and it is just an absolute shame. And then when I start digging out the numbers, the fiscal impact became apparent, which it is the third largest fiscal reimbursable mandate in our state. Right now, there is a law from 98 that is the third largest fiscal mandate on top of this $250 million. So the fiscal impact is staggering.
The third largest fiscal mandate? What do you mean? What's a fiscal mandate?
Okay, in 1998, there was the Hayden Bill passed that said that shelters have to keep the animals from 4 to 6 days, depending on if it's a weekend or holiday. Because what would happen is if you lost your animal and you went to the shelter, it could be dead already. So that was happening to a lot of people. It didn't give the time for people to come and get their animals or to be adopted. So this bill was passed, and it's a very good bill. But at the same time, you know, it allows for capital costs, because if you house more animals, you need to employ more people. You may need to be build bigger shelters. And so this has been growing exponentially along with the amount of animals over the years. So the only way to address this fiscal mandate that is growing out of control is with spay and neuter.
Judy Mancuso, just going to remind our listeners, you're the campaign director for the California Healthy Pets Coalition and co-sponsoring the spay and neuter bill. Let me go back to Republican Anthony Adams. You're a Republican, the party of fiscal conservatives, and yet you voted no when you had a chance. How come?
Well, first of all, because this isn't a fiscal issue as it's being described, to suggest that it's inappropriate for us to spend $250 million a year on this concern is to suggest that we have a responsibility, and I would agree that we do. We have a general fund responsibility in the state of California to provide these basic services to California citizenry. All this does is just hide the ball. This just now says we're not going to want to have to bear this cost. You California citizens are. We don't want to have to do it as people who hold the purse strings. We're going to now put it on you to be responsible for it, and we're going to do it in the form of a hidden tax. We're going to start calling it a fee, and now you're going to have to pay this large fine if you don't get your dog spayed or neutered. You can enjoy the benefits of a spay or neuter, or you can pay us $500 for it. So all they're doing is shifting the cost back onto the taxpayers again, and it suggests that no cost change has occurred. You're still spending the money one way or the other. But instead of the government taking responsibility and using the funds that were already given by the taxpayers, we're now going to go back onto the people who are paying those taxes and asking them to pick up the tab for it.
Let me ask you another kind of question. You have, as I understand, in your family, a mixed breed pet. Only the purebreds will be exempt from the law as it's currently written. How important is that to you?
Well, it's hugely important. And just to be fair, the bill does make some minor exceptions. For instance, if you have a working dog, perhaps it wouldn't be necessary for that working dog to be a purebred. But absolutely, the purebred consideration is a very frustrating one. We have four dogs in our house. Two of them are boxers, and two of them are not purebreds. And to be frank with you, we work very hard, my wife and I, to help our shelters, help our rescue organizations, and we're very actively involved in the animal world. We actively seek out dogs who do not have homes. We actively seek out dogs who do not have, you know, necessarily purebred credentials. And they tend to be the best dogs. To suggest that my next dog is going to have to be, by definition, a purebred dog, because that is what we're eliminating all but, is to suggest that I don't have that discretion any longer to do that. I don't think it's appropriate for the federal or the state government to intervene in a way that suggests that the local government doesn't have the ability to already manage this problem. And I would suggest to the authors that they show us an example of where this has been implemented successfully, because I put it to you, it does not work the way they expect it to work, and all this does is continually penalize people who are law-abiding citizens because there are illegal activity going on that the government already can't enforce.
Okay, it passed out of your house, the Assembly, with exactly the number of votes that it needed, and then went to the Senate. There's talk of some amendments in the Senate. Is there anything that's going to make this bill acceptable to you?
Well, the bill is clearly a work in progress, which, by the way, why it didn't deserve to get out of the Assembly. But one of the things that the bill could do to be more palatable is to seek out those further exemptions that would give people like my wife and I, who actively engage in the sport of agility, the ability to continue to raise our dogs as we see fit.
All right. Assemblyman, thanks a lot for joining us.
I sure appreciate the time.
Anthony Adams, Republican from Hesperia. Back to Judy Mancuso. Several questions raised by the Assemblyman, but what about this one about the mixed breeds and his concern that about those kinds of dogs, which he says sometimes are the best after all?
Well, you know, I do want to address that, but the fiscal issue is huge, and being a Republican, he's getting this wrong. No disrespect to Anthony Adams, but, you know, first of all, when...
it's not a hidden tax if people have to pay for the spaying a fine of $500 if they don't do it?
This is completely misinformation and the kind of stuff that's getting put out there, and I have to address this. First of all, if you spay and neuter your pet and your animal is out roaming and it doesn't get another animal pregnant and that litter is not created, then that litter does not end up going to the shelter. In 2005, we brought in over 840,000 animals, dogs and cats, and killed over 450. That is an astronomical amount. And so if we cut down, if we spay and neuter, which is a benefit to the family, to the animal, and we spay and neuter and these animals are not coming in the front door, there's no hidden tax there.
So even the cost then of spaying and neutering plus whatever $500 fines are assessed wouldn't amount to $250,000, is what you're saying.
$250 million, a quarter of a billion. And the $500 fine is waived if you spay and neuter.
Okay,
vouchers.
What about the mixed breed?
Okay, the mixed breeds. We took the word purebred out ages ago. When we first looked at this bill, we said, okay, if we're going to ask Californians to spay and neuter, who exactly are we asking to do this? And we said, well, you know, you can't ask the people who have these, the dogs that are doing work of any kind, the guide dogs, the police dogs, this and that, or real reputable breeders or dog show folks. So originally we had purebred in there, and we even listed some registries. And then we realized, no, that doesn't work. We did ask the AKC early on to be a part of this process to help us write this part of the language, but they declined. So we, on our own, start thinking of ways that we could then, you know, go to target, you know, the folks that do not have a vested interest, per se, okay? And so, therefore, we took out the word purebred, and we called it a recognized registry, and we give the local jurisdiction the opportunity to create this registry as well, so that if they have mixed breeds in their jurisdiction that they want to put on this registry, they absolutely can.
What about the family that has the dog and wants the children to see the miracle of birth and a litter produced in the garage?
Well, you know, most of those litters, whatever puppies they can find homes for, end up at the shelters. And when those animals are given out into the neighborhood, they're unaltered and they go on to reproduce. And, you know, folks love to point fingers at who the problem is and who to go after as being irresponsible. But, you know, anyone that has an unaltered animal is responsible. You don't get to 841,000 by just any one group doing this.
You mentioned the AKC, the American Kennel Club. Patty Strand is a member of the board of directors of the American Kennel Club. And Ms. Strand, welcome to you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Why did the AKC, particularly when, even at the time that purebred breeders were exempt from this, not support it?
Well, let's be clear. I think people on both sides of this issue, whether they are hobby breeders like us from the American Kennel Club or people on the California Healthy Pet side of the issue, are animal lovers, and nobody wants to see healthy, adoptable dogs or cats put to sleep. Certainly none of the people that I work with who spend most of their time and money preserving and advancing the dogs that they have and helping with rescue and so on. What we differ on is that we believe that the methods that are being chosen for this bill will not lead to a solution to the problem. In fact, we would say that experience and history teaches us that when people are provided the right resources, public education, low or no-cost spay or neuter clinics, they become good pet owners and they don't contribute to the surplus pet populations. And I would specifically point to L.A. itself and actually a directive or a report that was put out on June 11th by the mayor there, and he says that there's never been a time in history when the number of dogs and cats being euthanized in the shelter there has ever been lower. And that is a function of all of the processes that are in place that are not coercive, that do not force the government into these private decisions and come between veterinarians and their pet owners. So we simply believe that the methods that are out there, despite the fact that we all still want to see the numbers of animals in shelters reduced further, we think that we can look at the trend line on graphs and see that we're moving in the right direction. And in fact, as Assemblyman Adams referenced just a minute ago, the places in the state that are not continuing to decline are mostly the places that have put these mandatory types of ordinances in place. The people begin to dump their animals at the beginning of it. But worse than that, it drives people underground, takes them out of the system, and makes them view government and animal control as the enemy. And we believe that animal control has a tremendously important role to play in society. Like the Assemblyman, we believe that pet ownership is such a high value in society, something like 63% of all families have a pet, that it should be funded out of the general fund.
Okay, now, let me just remind you, with regard to what you said about the mayor, Senator Alex Padilla of Los Angeles, former president of the city council, is going to sponsor this measure in the upper house. He says the city is overrun with strays, so there's difference about the statistics. But you said that the methods involved won't work. How is it that spaying and neutering wouldn't obviously reduce the number of dogs and cats?
Oh, I would say that spaying and neutering is the best tool we have, but that it is being successful. If you look at the trend for the last 30 years, the public has adopted this. They understand.
So this is just so compelling it is just the wrong way to do it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's the mandate that is wrong. And I would say, as far as Senator Padilla is concerned, he can actually go to the website of the Los Angeles City Animal Services and look at their data. The data is absolutely fantastic. If you had any other government program that you were viewing and trying to assess for effectiveness, and you got these kinds of reductions, you would be maybe having a parade in downtown L.A. to talk about the success that you're having.
Okay, yep. Patty Strand of the American Kennel Club, but back to Judy Mancuso of California Healthy Pets Coalition. What do you say to the fact that it's the mandate that really is objectionable and animal control officers will become the enemy?
Okay, well, what I would say, first of all, is it's not the mandate. It's the fact that we might cut into their bottom line. Just to tell you that the AKC, who is a nonprofit, in 2005 made $64,916,000 off registering animals, and that the president and chief executive made $500,546.
Okay, we don't have a lot of time, Patty Strand. Back to you. What's your response to that?
I would like to respond to that, because I think the American Kennel Club is the single best animal charity. It's a 501c4 in the country. With the money that it has, it goes out and it donates millions of dollars to canine research. It puts on these 4,500 animal events a year, and in California, the events alone bring about $100 million to the state. Now, in addition to that, the kennel clubs, the individual kennel clubs, are all nonprofit. They give away the excess money that they make putting on shows. This is a total nonprofit venture put on by hobbyists. And
Okay, very quickly, do you think you can kill this bill in the Senate?
I'm sure going to try. I'm going to give it all I have, and all of the other hobbyists and the mixed breed people. We love mixed breeds. We love all dogs. So.
All right. And Judy Mancuso, you've got just the exact number of votes you needed in the assembly. Are there going to be changes? You think you're going to be able to get it passed?
Absolutely. And there is no such thing as a hobby breeder. Our state laws in California say that if you sell more than two animals, you're supposed to pay taxes. So this hobby breeder thing is fictitious.
All right.
And we do have an example in Santa.
We're out of time, Ms. Mancuso. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate your help. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure, as this goes on. Judy Mancuso with California Healthy Pets Coalition, Patty Strand, American Kennel Club, and our earlier guest, Anthony Adams, Republican Assemblyman from Hesperia. I'll be right back with Which Way LA.
For more information about Which Way LA or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/whichwayLA. CD copies are also available. Call 1-800-600-KCRW.
Warren Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on Which Way LA. LA's Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa is recognized around the world as one of America's most charismatic politicians. For years, the Los Angeles Times has given him respectful treatment, and this week's announcement of his broken marriage got restrained news coverage. But for columnist Steve Lopez, the public way that the mayor handled his private life was a disaster. Steve Lopez, as always, good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The headline, Shut Up, Grow Up, Slow Down. Where does that come from?
Well, I actually cringed a bit when I saw the headline.
Well, then let me read you part of the column.
Well,
you got some tough language in here for the mayor.
Okay, go ahead.
Smarmy and self-serving, yet another slight to the wife and children, referring to the way that he handled his announcement. And you also say this, that maybe it's time for the mayor to wake up, realize it's time to tame his incorrigible teenage ways and do at least one job right.
Well, I will admit that it was a tough column. And when I first got the notice last week that, there was a statement out of the mayor's office about the breakup, I thought that that was, a graceful way to handle it and about all that needed to be said. There are rumors flying, as you know, and, we've been interested in looking into some of these rumors. I don't want to be a gossip columnist. And I don't think there are too many people here who want to write gossip. And I thought, let me just leave it at that. And then when I saw that he was going to have this press conference, I thought, well, why a press conference? What else is there to say? And I thought that, like I say, it was handled so perfectly and gracefully. And let's move on. Let's get back to work and move on. And when we saw that this was scheduled, I thought, well, what could he possibly do there? Maybe he's going to say something about the pressures of such an all-consuming job, or maybe he's going to answer questions about some of these rumors about, was there an affair, and who has he been seeing, and is it a situation in which the office of mayor might have been compromised? So when he says in his statement, please extend my family privacy, and then holds his press conference and says little to advance what we already knew, then my question was, why do it at all? I mean, if you want privacy, don't call a press conference. And it looked to me like it was a little bit self-serving and, it was kind of staged and some of his relatives there, and I just had a bad feeling about it. And even then, I thought this is a personal matter, and I've been through a divorce, and it's a difficult time, and you don't want to have to say any more than needs be said, but why do anything at all? And I just wondered if this was a moment when we caught a glimpse of, what for me has been a character issue with the mayor from the beginning, that it's always about Antonio, that he's got a long history of betraying people who are close to him, whether they're colleagues or family or supporters. And, to be an effective mayor of this city, you need to be able to work effectively with people. And I'm just concerned that maybe he is trying to do too much, and it's time to just slow down a bit and focus.
You say, in fact, he's spread so thin, all his major goals are unmet.
Well, think about it. We were going to get thousands more cops. We were going to have the subway to the sea. And, of course, that's not something that could have happened by now, but we don't have any kind of a funding plan for that. I mean, he said he was going to resolve the issues on Skid Row, and at the current pace, that's going to happen in about 20 years. He was going to end poverty. He was going to take over the schools. I mean, all of these things are admirable challenges, and I really like about Mayor Villaraigosa that he's not bashful about taking on difficult challenges like that. But I think maybe he would be more effective to just focus a bit more and see something all the way through.
Do you really think that your column and whatever he may be feeling at the moment personally about the failure in his personal life might get him to reassess his situation?
Well, I don't think I have that high of an expectation, but he is a sensitive guy, and I don't know that he will have read it and whether he'll take it to heart. But I do think that there are certain advantages that Mr. Villaraigosa brings to office, and I think that he still has time to get some things done and to have an effective a successful term. And I hope that maybe he does, take a look at this and think, okay, I've got to figure out what's important in my life and in my job. and focus on that. I don't personally need for him to run to every corner of the city from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. You know, a lot of that is it's nice to connect with neighborhoods and with people and get your face on camera in different parts of the city, but you know, what do you have to show for it in the end? And I think maybe now is the time for a turning point for him to reassess his style of leadership and what he can get done in the time that he has remaining. And I hope you know, in that way, that he does, you know, give it some serious consideration. I think that he's got tremendous potential, and so far he's not taken advantage of it as well as maybe he could have.
All right, Steve Lopez, columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
Producers of Which Way LA, Katie Cooper, Francis Anderton, Christian Bordol, Dan Konecki, Vanessa Romo, managing producer Karen Radziner, technical director Phoebe Zimmerman. For more information about Which Way LA, visit kcrw.com/whichwayla. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts covering politics, news, music, arts, and culture. For more details, visit kcrw.com.